Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Grace View, a discussion forum of life-enriching topics that pertain to family, men, philosophical perspectives, women, and singles. The Grace View is a production of John Davis Marshall and the Solomon Society. The Grace View may be heard live Monday through Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time by dialing 347-989-0722, or it can be heard at any time online at www.blogtalkradio.com. The Grace View. Now stay tuned for today's episode of Wondrous Women. If you have a question or comment, please dial the number one on your phone and we will give you the opportunity to speak.
Thanks to Andrea, and welcome to every person who has called in tonight and every person who will be calling in tonight. Tonight's a sad occasion. It's a sad occasion for families, individuals, cities, communities, and even, to some degree, our whole nation. No doubt every person has heard about the tragedy of the shooting in Charleston, South Carolina. We thought it would be good tonight to take this opportunity not to talk specifically about the dynamics and the logistics of what has taken place. But I would like to be able to tell you that that is the last tragedy that people will face. But I cannot truthfully tell you that. And since those tragedies are very likely to continue, you and I could just as easily be the victim or someone that's close to us could be the victim in the next. And I believe that we ought to live not fearful and paranoid, but the reality, I think we ought to prepare in advance, at least to the extent where we will have a sympathetic understanding to reach out to those who are the victims in many cases. So tonight I have a very special guest who is a native of Charleston, South Carolina. And not only is she a native of Charleston, she personally knew some of the victims in the shooting. Rachel Robertson, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Brother Marshall.
We are delighted that you have taken the time and that you are available to share some thoughts with us tonight. We are really not going to talk about any of the specific victims by name or anything of that nature. We just want to talk a little bit about how people are feeling, how they can cope, and what's likely going on. Sometimes the largest tragedy of the tragedy is the tragedy of the tragedy. And that is when a tragedy grips us, it becomes another tragedy, how we respond or how we fail to respond. Rachel, when you heard about the shooting, tell us what thoughts went through your mind and how did you feel?
My heart immediately began to ache. As you said before, I'm a native Charlestonian. I was born and raised there. My mother's from James Island. My father's from Johns. I grew up on west of the Ashley. And in Charleston, there's not that many degrees of separation among the community, particularly the African-American community. And everyone, even if you never worshiped there, that's not your community of faith, you knew about Emmanuel AME on Calhoun Street downtown. Even tourists, the building is so beautiful, it was something that everyone would stop and take a look at and see. So I was shocked and I was hurt because we knew so many people that were part of that community. And immediately the first thing that came to my mind was who did I know, I mean, that was actually affected by it. I could not get any rest, and I was hurting because I knew that my community and my people were hurting.
And that's certainly understandable. Let us not think for a moment that the only victims were the ones who lost their lives. Those people are part of a family, and their family has been victimized far and wide. But the victims go farther than that. There are some people who were on location, who lived, who were not even touched by the gunfire, but they too are victims. They will have emotional turmoil for days to come. Sometimes when tragedies like this happen, people agonize over, why was I spared and someone else wasn't? So it is an excruciating type of experience when this happens. Rachel, why do you think, let's assume for a moment that we were talking about this last week before this has actually happened, outside of the context that something tragic has happened. Why is a discussion of this nature important? Why do we need to think about how to respond even before a tragedy happens?
Well, outside of the fact that right now we would need to respond, I can't help but say this, but we would need to respond because so many of us are hurting, and we need to know how to help. We need to know how to heal and to give these people a valid, truthful, spiritual answer to in response to the pain that they're feeling. But it's important for us because, A, like you said, it could happen to any of us at any time, and we need to be prepared. I mean, not only possibly physically, there may be certain logistical things that we need to do, but also we need to be spiritually prepared because this could truly happen to any one of us. And I think it's another important reason that we discuss this because the world is going to ask why. I've already had friends and that I've been speaking with throughout the day that said, well, if you can't be safe in church, then where can you be safe? That you go to the house of God for protection, for comfort, for solace from the world, and this happens in this place. So they're asking questions, why? I actually read something today. It said that in Chinese, the same word for crisis is actually the same word they use for opportunity. And truly, this is a tragedy and a crisis, but it's going to provide us an opportunity to spiritually respond and let people know that there's hope and there's healing in him in this tragedy.
I think you're so correct. I think that one reason why we need to think about this before it happens, I think we can more healthily focus on what we're going to do for recovery.
Mm-hmm.
When it happens, we have a tendency to focus more on our hurt of the moment and the things that led up to that. For example, I was listening to a news conference around 12 o'clock. The police chief spoke, the mayor spoke, the governor spoke. And the mayor said there has been set up a fund at Wells Fargo Bank to help the victims, the families, to provide funeral costs, et cetera, et cetera. And he made a statement that I thought was so adequate, proper and adequate. He said, we don't, in a sense, we don't really know exactly what the dollars will be spent for, but to send a signal to the families mm-hmm. that people care. And the idea that people responded and reached out will make a world of difference. And it will go a long ways toward helping to heal the hearts of the people who are victimized. So I want to encourage people, and I should have written that down, but I was driving. Maybe every Wells Fargo bank, you might can take funds to it. I don't know whether it's just in Charleston or whether everyone across the nation but I'm sure they'll be able to get you into contact with how to do that. And I trust that everybody will send something as an indicator that we care about you and we are hurting. Rachel, what personal experiences have you as an individual, if you have had, that helps you to relate to this topic, and how have your experiences shaped your personal perspective of tragedy?
Well, you know, I can't say I've been through a personal experience, maybe as far as in like a tragic community event or violence, which just happened yesterday. My parents died pretty closely together, it really wrecked my foundation. I mean, that was an incredibly painful event, but I've not been through anything like this. I do remember the response during 9/11. And by the way, let me ask you, do you remember what church was like that Sunday after 9/11? What was it like where you worshiped?
I think everybody was focused on the tragedy and the concern that it could happen everywhere or anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I do think for an extended period of time, people were shocked and numbed because it was unbelievable.
Absolutely.
I did not see the first plane that flew into the tower. But there was a television on, and someone called my attention, and I saw the second or the third one of the planes as it went into the tower. I went into the building. But it did not cross my mind. I still did not think in terms of the number of people that was in that building who would be adversely affected and would lose their lives. And then as you saw the building crumble and you saw people running, you saw the debris, the toxic fumes that people inhaled. It was some critical. As a matter of fact, we were hosting, starting that Sunday, a seminar. We had flown in an out-of-town, that's the Sunday before, and this happened, I believe, on a Tuesday, Monday, I believe it was. He was unable to return to his home city. We had to provide automobile transportation because the airport was shut down. I do remember we had special prayer each evening for the victims and what had taken place. And for an extended period of time, it was just pure stunning that something like that could happen, that there were people who had the idea, who had had the heart to do something like that. And then as more of the facts came out about how it supposedly happened, that was just, and I really don't think that we have really, well, life has never been the same and will never be the same since, especially for people who are flying. It used to be you could go up to the terminal and watch your loved ones as they got on the plane, and you could stand and look out the window, and they are looking out the window of the plane, waving at you, and you cannot even get near that now. So life has been permanently changed, and lives have been permanently scarred. I do think that tragedies may have a tendency to dull our sensitivity to the extent where when it happens again, there is not nearly the level of response as before. It's kind of similar to, I've heard people talk about living in parts of cities where there's gunfire every night. They become accustomed. Though they are afraid and fearful, they are not as precautious, as overly alarmed as a person who is not exposed to that on a regular basis would be.
but you was fixing to say something.
Well, yes. I mean, when you were talking about the response that you saw on 9/11, I saw something similar. I remember at the congregation where I was at, that Sunday, it was standing room only. And the Sunday after that, I mean, we thought we were going to get in trouble with the fire marshal because it was so crowded. But my point was that in tragedy, people, they have a tendency to turn to religion in times of crisis and instability. I'm really curious what it's going to be like in worship houses this Sunday in Charleston, South Carolina. But my point about that was I remember just a few months later, I mean, when they also ran the polls to see what worship looked like 6 months afterward, a year afterward, basically the attendance had really been right back to where it had been pre-crisis. So it's amazing. I mean, the world, when they're confused and when they're hurting and in the midst of tragedy, they really do seek the comfort and solace of God. But there does seem to be, after the crisis is over, after their fears have been allayed, when they're no longer shaken up, things do seem to turn right back to normal. I'd like us to respond in a way that really builds faith, but also try to learn from our past lessons of how we can really encourage people to hold on to that faith, not simply in a time of crisis.
I do think that you're so correct. People respond out of fear, anxiety, mm-hmm. and then the further we get from a crisis, the less concerned we are about it. I remember a few years ago, a person had some heart issues, and that scared that individual and decided to do something about their health. So they got on a health program and lost almost 100 pounds. But the further they got from that initial shock, the less they were really concerned, the less the impact was about the severity of the life choices and decisions that were made. And so now there's not nearly that level of concern about health. And that will be true in Charleston, and it is true in every situation. However, I do think that out of tragedy, sometimes people are moved to connect with God through love. I frequently say that love is the only permanent motivator. If fear moves us to love, we may be permanently motivated. But if fear only causes us to fear, after a while, we are numb to that, whatever caused the fear, and there's very little mobility of motion as a result of that. You're listening tonight to Wondrous Women with Rachel Robertson and myself, John Marshall. We would love to hear from you. If you have a comment or a question, please dial number 1 on your telephone, and we'll give you an opportunity to ask your question or to make your comments. Maybe some of you have experienced a tragedy, or you know of people who have been directly involved, and your experiences could speak to what we're talking about tonight. Probably the worst tragedy that I am aware of that I had some personal connection with also took place in South Carolina back in the 80s. There was a family of 4 people who were murdered by a family member on a Sunday afternoon. 3 of the murder victims, I knew them personally. So for me, as far as numbers are concerned, I don't know of a situation previously where as many as 4 people and 3 people that I knew personally were murdered. As a matter of fact, 2 of the 4 people were husband and wife, and I had spent the night in their house. So they are the only people that I have close enough to spend the night in their house and then they end up being murdered by a family member not long after that. And that was a very heart-wrenching tragedy. Though that was almost 30 years ago, I'm sure it still agonized people. As a matter of fact, a couple of years ago, I was talking to a family member who happened to have been at the house when the shooting started, and they ran for cover to protect themselves. We have a caller, 2820, you are on the air.
Hello, Brother Marshall, and your guest speaker. This is Tanya, and I have experienced the tragedy like that before. At worship service, I was coming into worship service, and one of our members was shot on the parking lot. And I was like three rows behind her. Her husband shot her. And it was during the time that we were all gathering for a Bible study. So although it was just one of our members, a lot of witnesses witnessed that event, including me. When you started the program, I think you said something about, you know, not so much focusing on the event, but just the after effects of the event. The after effects in my experience was that we were so devastated as a congregation, and we were so hurt that it literally brought us very close together as a church family. It was a large congregation, and it was very hard to be close to everyone because the congregation was so large. But we became like family. You know, we all were hurt. We were all in tears. We were all devastated. One of the things that we did do is we set up a support group for the congregation, and I'm speaking to your point, Brother Marshall, as to how people will, you know, when they get afraid or something happens, you know, they jump in and they do something about it, and then after a while they become desensitized to whatever the issue was. What I noticed with the support group that we had established for the congregation is that for the first three or four weeks of the support group, because we had it weekly, we were packed. We could not seat the people. There were so many people that came. And then after a while, the support group began to dwindle down to just a few. And, and I asked myself the question, you know, why is it that we as human beings, when something happens to us so devastating, you know, it takes more than 4 weeks to get over something like that. But I just feel like that sometimes things happen. We don't know why it happens, but it does bring a community together. And the community needs to, in my opinion, really should focus on, okay, I've maybe gotten over it, or maybe I've learned to deal or cope with it in a different way. But we have all of these other people that are hurting, and so how can I support them, you know, even though I've decided I don't need it anymore, I don't need the support groups anymore, you know, I'm okay. But thinking of the family, because it was a large family in this congregation, don't want to take up too much of your conversation, but I just want to say that this event brought back the memories of the event that I experienced. And I've never been even to the city or the state, but I am just as hurt by this event as if I were there personally myself, because of the memories that came rushed back into my head as I witnessed this beautiful woman being killed coming to worship service. So I just want to say to the both of you, you know, I appreciate this conversation. I'm sure that other people, if they're listening and have experienced it, appreciate just being able to verbalize and say it's one of the most painful things that you can ever experience, you know. And you know, my heart goes out, and as I listen, I'm thinking to myself, what can I do? You know, what can I do to show love, you know, to my fellow brothers, sisters, because we're all brothers and sisters. I don't care, you know, what religion or whatever. We all, you know, are human beings. So I just thank you all for addressing the topic, and I just wanted to share that.
I appreciate you for sharing. Certainly, having had a personal experience gives you a perspective, gives you a front row seat of how people feel as they work through that. I'm glad to know that your testimony is one that there were things that people did and that they were able to heal healthily. The congregation continued to grow and flourish, and for that I am thankful and gracious. You're listening tonight to Wondrous Women. If you have a comment or question, please dial number 1 on your telephone, and we'll give you an opportunity to share what's on your heart. 5277, you are on the air.
Yes. I think one of the problems that we have is we have a very short attention span. We don't look at history. Because when we look at history, we see these things happen with, although more frequency now, but these things keep happening because we have people who are spiritually broken, and they're looking in all the wrong directions other than the Word. And when you look at the things that they do, people attack churches, schools. The one thing that you find in common, cowards attack places where they feel safe. Schools, churches, they usually know they find nobody else there with a weapon, so they have no fear of any kind of reprisal. They can go do whatever they like and walk away before any law enforcement, anyone comes. And, again, this just goes to show the nature of men. Nothing has changed. We just don't. We lead the world in shock, but we very, very seldom do we lead the world in deciphering the causes of the shock. These things are not new. And not wanting to sound as though I'm a conspiracy theorist, but when you look at things and you study things and you reflect on history, you start seeing patterns. And these patterns repeat themselves because we don't take the time to look and recognize the patterns. There's evil in the world. Scripture told us that. There's evil people in the world who manipulate and do evil things. And they do those things for a reason. I was very surprised at how fast all of this wrapped up from someone who nobody knows to the fact that now they know how he got the gun, where the gun came from. Those things amaze me at just how fast all that stuff turned around in a news cycle. But, again, that's just me. I'm the finance guy. I study things. And I'm a Christian. I just always kind of keep my eyes open, and I like to think outside the box. I think we need to do that a little more often. A lot of the things you're saying are very positive and very strong, but until we start recognizing patterns, this is going to keep happening.
We appreciate your comments. Certainly, patterns will help us to have some level of predictability, and with a level of predictability, you're in a better position to provide preventive. And there certainly are some causes, human behavior. Certainly we know that evil exists, but sometimes there are some functional, contributive type of causes that may could have been averted, or that the ultimate behavior might could have been predicted or discovered in advance and prevented. But then sometimes things happen that there doesn't seem to be any connection on how it is that people do some of the treacherous things. I had a conversation with a person today, and we were talking about, it appears this was a little different than any of the tragedies that I'm aware of, and that is in most instances people come in and they exact their violence to begin with, but I don't know that I've ever heard of a person sitting around that long and interacting with a group of people and then getting up and doing something. That's a whole nother, at least for my personal awareness and experiences, I'm not. In the next few minutes that we have. Yeah, sure.
Well, go ahead. I was just going to say, I'm really connecting with the comment that the caller just made, and it brought to mind some comments that she made at the beginning. Do you need to take a break?
No, go ahead.
Okay, it brought to mind some comments that she made at the beginning as far as, and this is certainly not the first tragedy that's come about, and it certainly will not be the last. Like he said, there's evil in the world. God told us there's going to be evil, and there will be evil people. But the only thing that's consistent is how do we respond to evil? What's the godly response to it? And how can we respond in a way that really makes this less than a short-term response? Like our responses are very intense after such a crisis, but they apparently, a lot of times, they're short-lived. But the solution that they're seeking when they're coming to churches and when they're coming and seeking their faith, it truly is a permanent solution. So how do we connect that? How do we make that see that it's not just an aspirin to take to make the pain to go away, but something that truly can sustain you?
I think one thing we ought to do in, as a lifestyle, one writer said, he that converteth a sinner hides a multitude of sin. I think as we think about evil that surfaces and people do violent and vicious things, this gentleman didn't just become evil yesterday, but evilness had been lurking in his heart. I think that as a lifestyle that we ought to keep our eyes open for people who are not processing their life experiences healthily. And we become what Isaiah said that Christ is. He is a wonderful counselor. So we've got to stop walking away from frustrated people wherever we encounter them. We've got to start planting nuggets of hope and possibilities and different ways of thinking and considering, so that people do not become as explosive as they do. Who knows if someone, not that we are taking responsibility for his behavior, but who knows what might could have been averted if yesterday this boy had received several deposits of love. Now, that may or may not, that might, I'm not trying to sound oversimplified, but I will say years ago, I had a lady who had decided to commit suicide, and a person saw the expression on her face, and he just said to her, "I'm going to pray for you, it's going to get better." And just that detection on her face and the statement that he made, she went home and decided to live and told us about that experience. Had she not received that word of nurture, the things that she was processing in her mind very likely would have met a violent end. I don't want that to sound like an oversimplification, that the problem is we aren't loving people enough. But I am saying that most people who promote and perpetuate any type of violence, it's not just one thing. It is a series, as the caller mentioned a moment ago. You can chart a series of events that transpired in his or her life and they did not process them healthily. Now, that doesn't always mean that the events themselves were unhealthy, but how people process it. For example, a person said to me, they came in a church to attend the worship. At the time they stepped into the auditorium, a person leaned over and said something to another individual. That person was totally convinced that they were talking about them. Well, how they processed it. They don't know, but they felt strongly because the person happened to have seen them, and they chose to never, ever again worship at that place. Well, how they processed it made the difference. They could have looked and said they were already having a conversation, and it never crossed their mind that they were being talked about. So how people process can make a world of difference. You're listening tonight to Wondrous Women. I know that you have some comments or questions. Please dial number one on your telephone so we can get you in before the end of the program. We really want to hear from you. Dial number one on your telephone. Don't be shy and timid and wait till the program is over and then said, I could have said, I should have said. Just go ahead, dial number one right now, and we'll give you an opportunity to share. Rachel, when things like this happen, what are some of the strengths that are exposed when tragedies happen? What do we then discover about our strengths?
You know what? Usually we can, a lot of times we see some beautiful things about humanity in tragedies like this. You'll see people immediately, like you mentioned earlier, starting to just to try and find ways to help. Even if they don't know specifically what they can do, they want that family or the people that are hurting to know that they're cared about. Another thing that's beautiful and that's a strength is that people tend to go back to their core. They usually tend to, when they don't know what's going on, they'll go right back to their faith. They go right back to their God. People that have been nominal members, infrequent members that have never set foot inside of a church or a house of worship before, you'll find them going. So they're seeking solace. Those are all positive things, seeking God and seeking to comfort each other. So those are things that I think that are very positive, and that shows the beauty of humanity within a tragedy.
And also, I think here's a strength that is exposed, and that is the intensity of the emotional bond that exists among people who have no personal knowledge of that individual. As I was listening to the news conference, the mayor of the city broke down in tears. The police chief broke down in tears. The governor broke down in tears. I don't recall any other, and that may have been, and I'm just not aware, it could have slipped my mind. But what that says is the governor, even the police chief, the mayor, feels a kinship because of what has happened. And I am convinced that there are going to be, though there will may be some relationship disrupting, there are going to be some good relationships developed as a result of this. There are going to be some
absolutely
people in the majority ethnic group who are going to reevaluate themselves and going to reach out more than they have. And there are going to be some in the minority community that's going to reevaluate and look at how the majority is reaching out and come up with a different disposition. Now, unfortunately, everything is exploited. Some politicians will exploit it. Some talk show hosts will exploit it. Even some religious people will exploit it. That's just going to happen. But I am convinced the good that will come out will far outweigh that which is not healthy and wholesome. What weaknesses are exposed when we face tragedies like this?
Well, I would say one of the biggest weaknesses that we do see is this exposing this evil that exists and that prevails in the world. And then also another weakness is even though the responses of love are sometimes wonderful and intense, and the return to houses of faith and returns to the church are, it would be intense at first, it just tends to be short-lived. I remember after 9/11, the stats dramatically dropped after the shock was over and it was softened. People kind of went back to their daily routines and their daily lives, and they weren't seeking so much as to help one another quite as much or to see if each other was okay. And they certainly weren't being committed to worshiping the way that they had immediately after the tragedy. So unfortunately, even though they found something good and that's helpful, it does tend to be short-lived.
2064, I would say that's the weakness. 2064, you're on the air. 2064? Maybe
I'm sorry, I was muted. Good evening, Brother Marshall and Rachel. I thank you for this topic. You know, last week I was in a conversation with a woman who just recently, a new church started about 3 months ago. And she said that as she was preaching one time, she said in the spirit, God showed her a person entering the church, told what the person would show, what the person would be wearing with a backpack and boots and all of this. And so, but what she didn't understand, she was trying to figure out, was this person an enemy, someone who was going to enter the church to harm them, or you just wanted to make her aware? But what she decided to do was take formation and prepare the people in her church just in case those people were there to her. This person who would enter in, which she believed was there to do them harm. And so she put something in place, and she told the children, just watch me. If you get this nod, whatever signal she was going to give them, the children were to move closer to the mother, and the men were supposed to get into a position of protection, but not so much that people would notice there was something going on and they would feel uncomfortable. And so she took the time to prepare the church. And so I guess a week later, this person actually that she saw had on the boots, had the backpack, showed up at the door. And she said her church just moved into position. They were not there to do any harm for them. Nothing came out of it. But she was so proud that her church did exactly what she had set them up to do to make sure that they were safe just in case this person walked in the door and was there to do them some harm, but to make sure that the men were in position to protect, but also the children were with their parents. Now that those parents, and I was in a conversation earlier with another pastor about that, what do we do as a church to prepare our people to be in a position to watch and so engaged. I know we want them to be engaged in what we're doing and what we're teaching, but somebody needs to be aware of discerning whether someone's there to harm us or they're just there to participate. And I think that's where the church really needs to look at that. You know, what can we do? And I know this Sunday I have a meeting with my council, and I want to talk about that. What can we do? Because we don't have very many men, maybe two or three, that we can do to make sure that we're protected as a small church with the doors always open, people just walk in. And so, that's just my comment.
Thank you for that comment. I certainly do think having some preventive measure is wise, or at least having a plan. I remember growing up in elementary school, we had fire drills. We had fire drills in junior high and high school. To my knowledge, we never had a fire in the county, but they still regularly reminded us of a protective routine. 5277, you're on the air.
Yeah, just, again, touching on some of the things that we're talking about again. This is the finance guy I'm talking again. I think one of the things that I learned, and it would be good for people to kind of keep in the back of their mind, we tend to go to sleep, and we're on autopilot preponderance of the time. And what we need to start doing is having the mindset, more or less, of a bodyguard. A bodyguard does not go out looking for or expecting trouble, but they are always aware and cognizant of subtle changes. and things that are different, that are out of place. And these are the type of things that when you're aware of your surroundings, you, when something odd or strange happens, you don't have that syntax error where you kind of go blank for a minute figuring, what happened? That doesn't make any sense. You're in the mode of responding, putting yourself in safety. You know where exits are, know how to get in and out of places besides just the same way you came in. Being cognizant and aware of your surroundings, being aware of things that don't fit. Like, say it's 90 degrees and people are running around with hoodies and things like that on. It doesn't fit. You know, your mind is telling you we need to trust ourselves and listen to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
God gave us instincts that we are so used to not following and turning off now that a lot of things happen that really didn't have to happen.
We appreciate that comment, and I trust that all of you who heard will be cognizant of your surroundings and don't hesitate to verify what it is that you see that is out of the norm. I remember several years ago that we were having a year-ending program. So the floor was open for people to get up and make any comments they wanted about their thoughts for the year. Well, a young man whom we had never seen went up to the stand, and he had on a coat. His hair was a little unkempt, and when he got there, he started reaching in his pockets looking for something. And everybody was on their edge because nobody knew who he was. We wondered, is he reaching for a weapon or something? Though nobody made any efforts of protection or disarmament. But it turned out he had written a poem, and he had put it in his pockets, and he couldn't find it. He eventually found it, and he read that poem to the audience, and it was a beautiful poem. And it turned out he was the guest of a young man who attended there. But there was a sense of anxiety for a moment because nobody knew. And it appears that, ooh, this could be, and if my memory serves me correct, it was the year after, right at the ending of 9/11. So that's a situation where there was a level of concern. But everything turned out okay. Rachel, what are your final comments you'd like to share with the audience tonight?
The comments that I have basically are just that during this time, my heart is still so heavy because I know there are people in my community that are hurting. They're wondering, like people always have, why do these things happen? And why do these things happen to people that are supposedly good, that are supposedly trying to do the right thing. They just want to worship in the most innocent of settings that evil can prevail. So it's my thoughts basically that we would just somehow reach out to this community as they're hurting and let them know that God sees and he loves and he cares and he's there for them not just during the time of crisis but during all times. And I do know there are going to be people that are more receptive and that'll be looking towards some answers towards God as they're hurting right now. And I just want us to be there for them to provide lasting, sustaining answers, to let them know that it's not just something that you take. You're not just going to the emergency room in a moment of crisis, but he's there for you to sustain you at all times. I really want that message to get through. And I want us to be sensitive to those that are hurting. And I want us to share with the community that we do care. And that we want to share with them that God cares about them.
Thank you so much, Rachel, for those words and being a participant on the program tonight. We know that your heart is agonizing as ours, but you are a little closer to the tragedy than many people, having known some of the people there, and actually your family having been ministered to by some of the victims there. We will be praying for you as all of us will be praying for each other. Thanks for being with us. Make it a regular to be on Wondrous Women. Next week, it's going to be a fantastic program for you, and we look forward to having you with us then.
This episode of Wondrous Women has been brought to you by the Solomon Society. If this episode has blessed you, why not bless your friends? Send them this online address, www.blogtalkradio.com/The Grace View, so that they can hear what you have just heard. And to ensure the continuation of this ministry, please make a tax-deductible donation to the Solomon Society. You may text your donation to 404-620-2455, or donations may be given online at www.solomonsociety.xyz. Thanks for listening, and may the wisdom of God be forever in you.